Hey everyone! We are proud to announce this week's episode is sponsored by Notion. If you're an avid listener of Techish, you'll know how much we love this product. So much, in fact, people have thought that we were sponsored by Notion years ago.
If you haven't used it before, Notion is one tool to get your entire team or company or class to get organized with project management, wikis, and documents, all fully customizable. You can also use it for your own notes and tasks.
We even use Notion to manage this very podcast, from writing and sharing our show notes, to organizing live events, to sales. And because it's centralized, it even serves as a giant wiki. So onboarding new talent and getting them up to speed on all things techish is so simple. You can say goodbye to random Google Docs and all the 20 different tools you're using to manage your business or your project. Work together with dozens, hundreds, or thousands of your teammates in one place.
And if you're a productivity nerd like me, use it for your personal life to track your workouts, reading lists, and favorite quotes. So what you need to do right now is sign up with the link in the show notes to get your account and say hello to the future.
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of Techish. This is your co-host, Abidesi of Hustle Crew, and...
And Michael Pahane of POCIT in Tech. I said that wrong. POCIT and Techish. I should have enough practice after 5 years. I still get that wrong sometimes. Yeah, super dope to be back. Let's get cracking with the first story, methinks. So this is something that actually came up on my timeline right before we were about to record. And it was something that was trending. So essentially, the controversy stems from a Vice article where they investigated that actually US military via anonymous, via data brokers are purchasing like location data of like people via various apps. So a lot of the largest Muslim apps for like prayer and like dating actually use this service called LocateX, which is this data broker where you insert the SDK. So you insert code within your code base.
Yes.
And at various times, as someone's using the app, it will fire off the location to that kind of SDK. And then that company, LocateX, will then sell that data to whoever. It's not necessarily just the US military. It could be anybody, right? And then if you read the terms and services, you won't necessarily even know that's the case at all. Mm. And then the Vice article is really good because they spoke to developers at these companies and they were like, while the data is anonymized, it can be quite easily de-anonymized. Now, obviously, this was trending just because, you know, Muslim Twitter was like obviously up in arms. Obviously, the relationship between the Muslim population around the world and the US military isn't necessarily one that's pain-free. So understandably why people are like, well, this is an app that we trust, like to help us pray. And this is an app that might help us find a loved one and a partner. And it's spying on us basically and like giving up our location, like without our consent, really. What do you think? Because it's like we live in a world that people don't fully understand. Like we don't know what we're giving up when we download like random apps. We don't fully understand. And it's not through anyone's fault. It's just because it's almost like the Wild West. Like there is no regulation around this that says like every app has to explicitly tell you what's up. It's basically down to Apple or Android, Google to kind of come up with any kind of regulation, to self-regulate essentially. Like I'm hitting you. I don't think you've heard this story until I mentioned it. What's your initial thoughts?
I mean, I'm concerned because I'm not going to lie. When I download apps, and it's like, please read our terms and conditions. I be speed scrolling through those. I am speed scrolling through those. Because I'm just at the point where it's like, well, I'm going to use your app. Like I've been told by my friend to download it so I can talk to them, do this, whatever. It's like when lockdown first started and everyone got on House Party. And then everyone was like, House Party privacy. But they were already on it. And it's like the time there was that like face swapping app that everyone got obsessed with and like millions of people downloaded. Mm-hmm. It was number one in the app store. And then it turned out to be like, whatever, like taking all your data for the Russian government or something. So in some ways, it's terrifying. But in other ways, it's something that we've covered in Techish before. So like, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, I'm concerned, but I'm not surprised, which says a lot about the world. That's quite troubling, I think. The second thing I was going to say is, let's talk a bit about how anonymized data can be easily de-anonymized. You're the software engineer in the room here. How does that happen? Because sometimes I'm like, well, if it's anonymous, I don't really mind. Your product is free. Sure, have a bit of my data. Why not? You're not going to hurt me with it. But now you're saying intelligence services can take this anonymized data, take some other data and work out, oh, she's a threat to national security. Take her down. Is this what you're saying?
Apparently. So, you know what? You put me on the spot. Actually, I wouldn't even necessarily know how they de-anonymize it, to be honest, because I've worked in startups where obviously we encourage people to download our apps and then we can see people's location. So I've worked with data that's not necessarily even anonymized. So I was shocked when I first, you know, I was a junior engineer and I was like, whoa, we can really see down to like super granular level where people be at and people trust us with this, or they're not necessarily aware of this, but I don't necessarily know how to de-anonymize it. It could be because they have a different data set around you. So let's say we know in your anonymized form is walking through these locations, but I also have a data set that tells me about you that and I know these are the locations that you frequent. Therefore, I can connect those two data points and say that's Abadesi, essentially.
Why does the military need this data? What are they trying to do?
Naive.
No, I am genuinely curious. Like, is this like anti-terrorism kind of measures? Just doing their like basic surveillance that they tend to hide from us? I mean, how deep are they going here?
I think it's a combination of all the above. We live in a surveillance state, really, to a certain extent. And yeah, anti-terror measures. Obviously, the whole controversy with Obama years ago in terms of the drone strikes and stuff, that's predicated on location data. So I think even if it's not necessarily those two programs are correlated, I think it's obviously good to have on board if you are somebody who doesn't necessarily care about the privacy of individuals and you care about achieving your objective, which might be national security or might be just keeping tabs on people. Like, I went to a conference that was like a black tech conference, and they had like a lot of UK BLM, Black Lives Matter activists, and they were telling me the extent to which they have to guard their privacy because they are kind of deemed as not necessarily enemies of the state, but they are a nuisance. And what, you know, measures have been taken to track them, they were incredibly paranoid. I didn't necessarily know if it was necessary to be that paranoid, but now I think probably it was actually. So it's a strange time.
What about this? The company's loyalties to? Okay. So if I set up a brand and I'm saying, hey, Muslim people who want to find other Muslim people to date. I know sometimes it can be hard, especially in certain countries where Islamophobia is alive and well. Come into this safe space that we have built for you, that we have created for you to find your own. And you're like, wow, this is awesome. This is cool. And there's another black app as well. So, you know, me as a black person, I might be like, oh, this is exciting. Let me get in here. Mm-hmm. Now, the same company that I thought was loyal to the needs of my community as an oppressed group, as in a marginalized group in a, you know, white supremacist society or whatever, is now selling data about my community to military contractors who then sell that to US intelligence, who create processes and strategies that you could argue are actually putting my communities at risk. Maybe not necessarily only here in this country, but also like in our origin countries.
Yeah.
There's something super messed up about that. So my question would be to the companies, it's like, who are your loyalties to? Are they to the customers that you built a brand around and who you are profiting from? And if so, why are you giving in to the contractors and to the military?
But the question, you said that they are profiting off their users, but in many instances, without this kind of transaction, i.e. selling their location data, they are not profiting off their users. Like, how many people actually pay for dating apps? Very little. Dating apps have high churn because everybody kind of just passes through. And as soon as you find a relationship, you're out of the app. So the churn is extremely high if the app is successful, right? So how do they monetize? A lot of these apps also are based in like Vietnam, other parts in Asia. People don't necessarily know who these kind of app developers are. And if someone says to them, listen, here's a little SDK, just insert this into your code, and every time you send us some location data, you'll get some pennies, you're going to do it, really and truly. Like, unless you have some real high like moral fiber and some real scruples, you're not going to be like, turn that down. So it's just basic capitalism. You don't even necessarily start with nefarious aims. You just start with, we build a service, we get 100 million users, right? Okay, so how do we monetize this? Nobody wants to pay for this. What do we have that's valuable? Everyone's location data. Or data. And like, it doesn't necessarily require anybody to be twirling a mustache and thinking, let me just, you know, it's a trap. Like, I don't think the US military is creating these apps, right? Like, they're just profiting and trying to utilize what's there. And they've got dollars to spend, and these apps don't have any money. And it costs money to run these apps. So yeah, it's a very perverse system. Very, very perverse.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to keep tabs on this. What would be the solution? We know that we've said it before on previous episodes of Techish. When the product is free, you are the product. We've warned our listeners.
Right.
And now we just don't know where that endpoint is. Now we're in this place where like the endpoint could potentially be individuals, organizations whose missions completely go against our values. What can we do as consumers, as individuals?
I think think about this, like if I was setting up like a food stall and Abadesi had a rival food stall and Abadesi's food was $20 or $10 and my food was free, which food are you eating? You're probably not going to eat my food because you'd be,
let's just be better.
Yeah, cool. Nah, man, you can't mess with my, I have some injera, I have some East African food. You want me to beat me. But anyways, yeah.
Injera versus Jollof. Let's not even go there, man.
Don't start a war on this podcast right now. But like you would side eye my food. You'd be like, why is this free? Is this like food out of date? Is it like off? Is there like, what's the trick here, fam? Like, what are you trying to do, right? You would think the quality is poor, but for some reason with software, we're like free, yeah, let me just put any kind of app or software on my phone, right? And I think we have to transfer that mindset into the software world as well. Do you get what I'm saying? That
right.
This view of just being what's free, do you know what I'm saying? Doesn't necessarily mean that paid apps are necessarily better, but the paid app software developer has less of an incentive to screw you over in that kind of way, whether that's selling your data or showing you ads that are kind of messing with your mind. Are you familiar with Jeremiah, the music artist?
Yeah.
He had a song called, what's the song? Birthday Sex. And then he's been about, like, he's doing
birthday
this thing.
Birthday Sex. I'll stop.
We sing too much on this podcast. That's all right. When I listen back to him, I'm like, why are we singing? Anyways. He's actually, obviously on a more somber note, he's actually very seriously ill right now. He's got COVID-19. He's on a ventilator, apparently. And anybody who has been following COVID, you know, and the kind of path that happens when you get ill, like when you're in a ventilator, really, you're on the last chapter if you are not going to pull through, right? He's a very young person. He's 33. I'm literally the same age as my man, right? And I think there are so many people out here who are still thinking this is a joke or it's not real or it's a hoax or whatever. And unfortunately, just because, you know, our kind of community is like, we have an innate suspicion of authority and power systems because we know how those systems have treated us historically. So I understand why a lot of black folks are just like, oh, I'm not sure about this. I'm, you know, like, what's going on? The powers that be. I don't know what to believe. But let me tell you, this thing is real. Like, I've been to enough funerals. I've been to a few funerals regarding this whole thing. I won't say any more than that. And I hope Jeremiah pulls through. And then I hope it ends up being a story that we can say, listen, this thing is real. Everybody take it seriously. Wear your damn masks. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because
wear your mask.
There was a tweet that a nurse put out saying how, like, a lot of the patients who are basically on their last legs are still shouting and screaming, saying, no, COVID's not real, it ain't real, it's Biden, and they're literally struggling for breath. Yes, I'm telling you, it's mad out here. There's people out here who are getting it, getting ill, dying, and they're still thinking it's some Bill Gates pseudo conspiracy. You know what I mean? Like, ah, man, I've fixed the wall for me. I can't do this now. I'm tapping out right now, fam.
I lost a relative to COVID recently. I'm really sad about that. And I mean, there's so many of us, right? I mean, thank you, but there are so many of us, just like you said, and I just don't know how many people have to die before people realize that this is real. And we're all in this together. This is the test, isn't it? It's like the real test of humanity, like the real test of, can we rally together as a global community? And to be honest, like, do we deserve to exist? Because at first people were like,
as a species, you mean?
I'm being serious, man. Because you are only as great as the sum of your parts. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And I think we're learning a lot. We're learning a lot about ourselves right now. And I think there's some really, really great things happening. And then I put the spotlight on that. But there's also some really, really troubling stuff. And we're only as good as the worst. That's the thing. So, I'm looking at everyone, really. Like, we're all a part of this. And, you know, if you're doing your bit, great. But, you know, people that aren't doing their bit, you got to get them on side now, because we got to be wearing a mask. We got to be taking this stuff seriously. Who knows when it will be safe for us to resume whatever life used to look like? I can't even remember. Tekish live shows. You remember those? Remember those, Michael? Yeah. Remember Tekish live shows?
I do. Yeah. November 2019 feels like a lifetime ago. Gosh. And we had so many plans to do, like, so many more, like, in real life stuff. And it's like, it's just been thrown by the wayside. But obviously, that's not the most important thing in the world. It's interesting because I think, what was that Stalin quote about, like, one death is a tragedy, but, you know, a million is just a statistic. And I think so far people have fallen victim to that. So you might hear, like, oh, there's been like a million COVID deaths worldwide. I think 250 in America, 50K in the UK. After a while, your mind just glosses over. It's a number, isn't it? But unfortunately, it might take a celebrity or somebody who's young and hyper. And I don't wish this on Jeremiah or anybody, but what I'm saying is, unfortunately, it might take something like that for people to wake the fuck up. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because people hear numbers and they just think, yeah, whatever, innit? I think there was a study where they, like, had, like, a picture of, like, a poor starving child, and they said, like, do you want to donate? People wanted to donate, right? Then they had, like, three starving children. People were less likely to donate. As in, the more the numbers go up, the more abstract it becomes to people, and the more it's about an individual story, people can relate to it. This virus picks on so many flaws of human thinking, like, that it's insane. Like, that kind of refusal to accept numbers as real things, the fact that we don't understand how things scale, that's another thing. Like, people will say to me, like, oh, this virus isn't serious. Like, because, you know, how many people drown every year in swimming pools, or how many people die in car accidents? That number is much higher. Not realizing that if you drown in your pool, it has no impact on me. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it's not going to increase the amount of people that drown in their pools. But this virus is a highly scalable thing. Like, you having the virus impacts me, and then I might spread it to 10 other people, and it can go exponential and out of control before we even know it, right? But people are not used to thinking in those kind of statistical ways. They're usually just thinking about static numbers. I don't know. Anyways.
I think also people are super selfish, and like, I just want everyone to think about like the children in their lives and the young people in their lives. Like, we remember what it was like before, but there are a lot of people who don't, and they're at the like significant stages in their career where they either should be starting employment, starting university, starting whatever. And I just think like we owe it to them to be responsible so that they don't end up this like lost generation. Like, we shouldn't make this drag out any longer than it has to, just for those, you know, still on their way up.
It's a funny thing. Like, I was debating with my friend who has it worse, and he was arguing with me that people in our like age range have it worse because like we're losing like the last few years where we can legitimately party without looking like the old guy in the club. It's like, so like,
what?
So like, if you're 32 or 33, like, and then the pandemic lasts for like 4 years, by the time you're like 37, 38, it's like, you can't really go out no more and celebrate.
Oh,
like
no.
But as a guy, you just don't want to be the old uncle in the club. Like, you will remember going out like 20.
And ain't nobody gonna know how old you are. All the brown people, black people, we can lie about our age. We can lie. Also, we're the best age because our prefrontal cortex finished developing a few years ago. We know who we are in the world. We have like a sense
we got money now.
Yes, we have disposable income, and most of us don't have kids. So we're just like, hey, teenage life part two with less drama.
Yeah, so if you see me in the club at 40, just face front. Don't mind your business, man. Mind your business. That's what I'm saying. Yo, everyone, we got a shout out our sponsor, Storage Labs Inc. They are pioneering decentralized cloud storage, along with making object storage much more secure, resilient, and faster. They're a completely globally distributed company and a remote first team. They're currently hiring on Pocket Jobs, one for a senior data engineer and the other one for a growth marketing manager. So if you're looking for a change of pace and you want a new start and you're interested in cloud storage and any of those roles sounds like a fit, give it a look, have an apply, and tell them that Tekish sent you. Both roles are in the show notes. Peace. So in tech business news, Airbnb is soon to go public. DoorDash is filing a lot sooner to go public. I got my eye on Airbnb, I can't lie, because I think even though as a user, I'm not like a super fan of the product.
I was like, oh, are you now, Mr. I like a hotel?
Yeah, man. Yeah, but listen, I'm a capitalist, isn't it? I'm looking to allocate my capital where people are happy to spend their product, to spend money on a product. Like, and if I'm not a fan of the product, doesn't mean that I'm not willing to invest in that product. Do you see what I'm saying? It's actually interesting because part of the reason why the initial angel rounds and the initial VCs who didn't invest in Airbnb didn't want to was because they didn't understand it. Like, they are used to like plush hotels as a rich VC. They couldn't understand why would anybody want to sleep on someone's sofa or in a stranger's house. So a lot of venture capitalists lost massive returns just because of their inability to like think about how other people view the world. That's a little side tangent.
Privilege blinds you.
Yep, and it makes you lose money. So they were profitable 2017, 2018. Obviously, there's a net loss since 2019. They have recovered slightly. Basically, international travel is down. So international Airbnb stays are down, but internal to the United States and internal within countries has gone up, and there's long-term bookings now. So they seem to have bounced back. And I think compared to Uber, I think, like I said before, they have a real moat. I don't think Uber is actually that much of a defensible business. I think Airbnb is much more defensible because if you wanted to replicate Airbnb, you'd need to set up relationships with hosts all over the world. Like you can't just have hosts in the UK or the US. You need them in Germany and Italy and in Spain and South America, and that's a very sizable undertaking. So that's why I differentiate this from Uber, which I think is a terrible stock to own. And obviously, this is all just entertainment advice. This is not financial advice. Don't buy stocks just because I'm saying to buy.
Even though
my track record is really good. What's your thoughts on the Airbnb going public? Your favorite company?
Airbnb, often I bring up as a case study for like, you know, inclusion efforts. Yes, fine. They are one of my favorite companies. And I'm a big Airbnb user. And it's so interesting that while international travel has gone down, within country travel has gone up. And, you know, I stand by that. I have used Airbnb the few times lockdown eased and I could go away. So I think this makes a ton of sense. Look, I mean, ain't going to say nothing new here. Big fan of Brian Chesky and his team. at the beginning of the pandemic, they took decisive action to downsize, which would have been very wise from a financial perspective. They were like, look, let's keep, you know, whatever margins we have healthy if we can, and let people go, drop headcount. It's going to be one of the positive tech news stories of 2020, I think, this float.
You think so? Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So they are not giving shares to any of the hosts. So essentially, there was this movement for these kind of platforms to give equity to, you know, Uber drivers to get equity, for Airbnb hosts to get equity. And so far that hasn't happened.
Shareholders vetoed that. They were like, nah.
Yeah, they were like, hell no. So I think it's interesting because with Airbnb hosts, I don't particularly care if they get equity, because to be a host, you essentially have to own a property, right? Like, you're already, compared to the average person, quite well to do. To be an Uber driver, I would love to have seen them get some piece of the business. Do you know what I'm saying? Especially the ones that have been there since day one, and like, they haven't really been able to kind of, you know, financially capitalize on the rise of that company.
What's the latest on those folks unionizing? Contractors in the shared economy.
So I don't know about unionization, but there was a thing in California called Prop 22, which essentially would have meant that Uber drivers and all kind of gig workers would be classified as employees and no longer as like flexible contractors. But that actually didn't pass. It failed. It was like an open ballot, but people could vote, and people decided not to support that movement. So essentially, gig workers don't have healthcare, they don't have benefits, they don't have anything. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, but the public said no and said, yo, keep these guys as they are. So I don't know about unionization, but I know that on that front.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that it's crazy that these folks, who often are some of the most vulnerable in society, and that's why they're picking this work, don't have benefits. You know, what happens when you're the sole breadwinner in your family and now you can't drive your car because, you know, you have some kind of long-term illness or something's happened to you. So I just think about this accelerating gap between the rich and the poorest, and the safety net that we as a society create for people who, let's face it, we rely on so much. Yeah, I think it's shameful that we're not doing more for that. But I wanted to say one more thing on the Airbnb IPO that I left out. We've been talking on previous Techish episodes about the dearth of IPOs. You know, Stripe raised another big round. We got a lot of unicorns in the mix who are not going public. They're staying private. They're looking at all of the drama that Facebook and Twitter are going through. All of the, I guess, just controversy that they're facing with the public and in the media's eyes as they grapple to control things like data privacy, hate, all this kind of stuff. I am really happy that Airbnb are going public and holding themselves accountable to the legislation that comes with being public, more transparency. More following of best practices. I really hope that, I mean, I know the economy is not in the best place right now, but I do hope we see more IPOs in next year as well, in 2021.
Yeah, on that point, actually, so DoorDash raised nearly $3 billion in VC funding, and that's before they've gone public. And, you know, like, if you think back to, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think when Microsoft went public and Apple went public, the amount of capital they raised was minuscule. You're talking like sub 50 million. And these companies ended up being game-changing, world-defining products and companies. And you think DoorDash really needed $3 billion? And I spoke to, this is the one thing. This is the one thing. Not just that they're useful, but one of the things that I spoke to, like on Clubhouse, I spoke to a restaurateur, and I said to them, so talk to me about like the fees on these platforms. Like, how is it? I've heard some people say that it's onerous and they can't even barely survive. And she said, for the first week, they did a promo with Grubhub, and I think they made $5,000 in sales, but they only got to keep $1,400. Are you checking it? Grubhub got the rest, essentially. Yes, it was a promotional situation, but let me tell you, these restaurants are getting squeezed by these platforms. And even still, these platforms still can't turn a profit. So I don't know what is the long-term sustainability of these companies like Uber Eats and DoorDash. Like, I don't know how they're going to make it work. Uber Eats is still not profitable as well. So yeah, I don't know. They're almost like non-profits and are subsidized for the consumer. Like, that's almost how it is. Like, we're getting discounts than what we should be paying in the market so that these companies can stay unprofitable. I don't know. Make it make sense.
Don't make sense to me.
Make it make sense, man. So I was like looking through my Twitter, as I do, and I see Space Karen trending. Right. So I was like, what was this?
Space Karen?
Yeah, Space Karen. As in, you know how people say Karen? Like, yeah. there's Karen, right? I was like, who the hell is this? Like, and basically it's Elon Musk. So, so Elon Musk, he came out and was like complaining about the fact that he had a COVID test. He did it 4 times and then it was a rapid test, half an hour results. 2 of them came back positive and 2 of them came back negative. And he was like, oh, this is some BS. Like, what's going on? There's something real sus. And then like a PhD said, listen, when you do those rapid tests, you can only detect COVID when you're absolutely like riddled with it. So, and then she then refers to him as Space Karen. You didn't read up on the test before complaining to your millions of followers. I don't know. I just found that funny. I think that's definitely a name that's going to stick with him. You know what? I mean, listen, you've always been, you know, casting a critical eye on Elon, and I've always been also defensive. Casting a critical eye, but not the, nah, come on, don't play me like that. I ain't been defensive. Like, but I just need balance. Balanced. That's my perspective. I think definitely he is obviously incredibly talented and like a visionary, and I respect much of the work that he does. But as a person, I'm not necessarily sure about him. And he's been horrible when it comes to COVID. Came out and said, oh, COVID would be ending on April. And obviously he just couldn't get over his own bias, which is like, this shit is effing up his business. Like the fact that COVID had to have lockdowns meant that his factories were shut down means that he wasn't making money. I've seen him on podcasts where people are asking him about, you know, you said April will be over. Like, what's going on? And he's threatening to storm out of the interview. Like, and it doesn't make a difference how smart you are, because whatever you say about him, no one can deny that objectively he's very smart. We all just have these blind spots, and yeah, he's a troll. He's a Trump-esque, Kanye-esque type troll. And I lost a lot of respect for him over the last few years. I still give credit where credit's due. Like, I think they recently just set something up into space. Like, SpaceX did the first American-made spacecraft, yeah, sending astronauts to space since 2011. Like,
pioneers.
Yeah, I mean, listen, shout out to that, because I think actually up until then, I think NASA had to use like Russian spacecraft and whatnot. So listen, he's a pioneer. I'm not going to take that away from him. But as this whole COVID thing, he's been a muppet. And Abba, you called it. I step back, I fall back. Listen, you got it right.
I'm noticing a pattern here. It feels like multi-millionaires and billionaires are quite unbearable people. Now, just humor me for a second. What if we start a search for the most relatable billionaire? Techish presents your billionaire best friend. Because there must be some. There must be some billionaires who are not this far removed from reality and infuriating. What about Jack Ma? What's he like?
I've been meaning to read up on his biography, but I don't know enough about him. Anyone that we do enough digging on, we're going to find out that there's some, you know, problematic aspect of them. Like, I mean, I used to always use like J.K. Rowling. Not, I mean, listen, Oprah is, you know, I'm sure there's something. There's not, you can't, the thing is, if I digged into your background, I'd find something as well. No, but if I digged into your background, I'd find something as well. Do you know what I'm saying? If you dig into my background, you'd find something. I'm just making a point. You know what I'm saying? And then obviously, listen, the accumulation of that kind of wealth, you got to step on some people. Like, you just have to. For example, Bill Gates, he was notorious for going to companies and saying, you either sell your company to us or we're going to clone you and shut your ass down, right? That is vicious. That's a vicious capitalistic thing to do, right? Some people would co-sign that. I would side eye that and be like, I don't agree with that kind of mode of business, right? So yeah, we had this question during the live show. Are there any innocent billionaires? Like, I don't think necessarily there are, just because primarily A, there's no innocent people. Be first, fourth, and foremost, yeah. And obviously, to get that kind of wealth, more times than not, you're gonna have to be very ruthless, very aggressive, and let alone what's the morality of having that kind of wealth in the end.
There's got to be at least one. And also, I'm not saying you have to be innocent. You can have some skeletons in your closet. We all do. We're human. I'm just saying you have to be relatable. I'm just saying I have to be willing to, you know, I don't know, maybe be trapped in an elevator with you and not want to like poke myself in the eyes. There must be someone or a few. They're out there.
Jay-Z. I was gonna say Jay-Z, but then you mentioned being trapped in an elevator, and Jay-Z's history with elevators and like salons and stuff like that is probably not a good look. So now I think Jay-Z probably, as in terms of the most relatable person I could have a conversation with would be Jay-Z or Diddy, but maybe that's my bias because I listen to hip hop and you know, I've grown up listening to Jay. So maybe somebody else would be like, nah, I got nothing to say to Jay.
I don't know if I'd be safe with Jay in the elevator. You saying that he's at risk of Solange. I feel like Becky with the long hair, I'm just going to keep to myself.
So speaking of billionaires, actually, so there's a podcast that's come out that I listened to the first episode, and it's quite interesting. It's Bill Gates. He's teamed up with Rashida Jones. Rashida Jones is an actress, filmmaker, documentary, and also the daughter of Quincy Jones. And yeah, I think the pairing of the two, like the kind of youngish person who's pop culture versus the Bill Gates, like billionaire tech, I think it's a good pairing. And I think if there's anybody out there who needs a PR help right now, it's Bill Gates. Because fam, if you just type in Bill Gates' name into Twitter, if you speak to anybody that, you know, probably like is just an average person and ask them what their perspective is about Bill Gates, especially if they're of color or like from a working class background, they'll just tell you like, yo, this guy's the devil. He's this, he's that. He's trying to take over the world. He's evil. And it's ironic. I probably had more of a negative opinion of Bill Gates when he was running Microsoft. And that's when everybody loved Bill Gates because all the rappers were like, Bill Gates, I want that Bill Gates money, billionaire, blah, 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 blah. And then now that he's trying to help people, everybody hates him. I don't know. Make it make sense to me. What's going on? And are you going to listen to this podcast?
So I'm going to listen to this podcast because I love Rashida Jones. I loved her in Black AF. I loved her in Parks and Rec. People don't like Bill Gates because he embodies the white savior trope and because Melinda Gates told women in Africa to have less children when she needs to be minding her own damn business, if you're asking me. So that's what I want to come out with straight out the bat. It's really difficult for us to explore someone's legacy over a long run and weigh out the pros versus the cons. You see what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to say that there aren't great people working at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and that they haven't made a great contribution to the world. I spend a lot of my youth on MSN Messenger. I'm a big fan of Microsoft. Clippy, that little... Yeah, that guy, paperclip in Word, he taught me how to write letters, taught me lots of my first, you know, documentation skills.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Satya Nadella at Microsoft now, I mean, doing great things. So look, Bill Gates has a legacy that many of us, you know, would dream to even create a fraction of, but it has not been without its problems. And I think the discourse around white privilege has advanced a lot in our lifetime. And one of the things that is incredibly problematic about their approach is that it feels neo-colonialist. It feels, we are rich and we are white. Let us come to your land and tell you how to live. And it's just like, yo, this isn't like a 1990s Disney movie. This is real life, real people. We have a voice. We have agency. If you want to help us, give us money. Stop using us as human lab rats for your experiments. Stop dictating to us what to do without understanding the unique cultural perspective that we have. And I think that's what's really problematic. And, you know, sometimes it's not about using your platform to solve. Sometimes it's about stepping out of your platform and giving that platform to someone with less privilege. And I think people have been calling on them to do more of that. You see what I mean?
I get that. I think there are legitimate criticisms of what they're doing. I want to read up more on it because I think I saw the documentary, but I want to know more on a granular level, like what is the actual impact they're trying to have and whether they've had as much impact as they say they do. But it doesn't answer my question because you mentioned critiques that are more, that are genuine, that are based in reality. But why is he now being portrayed as like the great Satan? A lot of people genuinely think that he architected this whole COVID-19 thing, that he is like trying to take over the world, that he's trying to put microchips in us. If I was on his PR team, I would be like, this podcast is a good move. You need to humanize yourself because right now there's a lot of people that don't think well of you, and rightly or wrongly.
Yeah, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories cooking about with relation to him. I don't know, like some people just end up on that part of it. He probably pissed someone rich and important off and they just hired a Russian bot farm to spread these stories. Let's face it, that's how the world works now. You don't want to pick a grudge with a powerful person anymore because they will just destroy your reputation with social media. That's why I smile to everyone. Stay friendly.
Hey everyone, we are proud to announce the all-in-one workspace Notion is this week's sponsor of Techish.
This pandemic has fast-forwarded us to a remote-first working world. And in this brave new world, there are a few startups set to have more of an impact this next decade on the way we work than Notion.
If you haven't used it before, Notion is an all-in-one tool to get your entire team or company to get organized with project management, wikis, and documents, all fully customizable. You can also use it for your own notes and tasks. In all honesty, if I wasn't silly enough to want to be an entrepreneur, I'd love to work on a product that was at the intersection of beautiful design and utility, and that's Notion to a T.
Lucky for you, they are currently hiring. So if you are looking to join a fast-growing team, or if you're looking for a career change, they've got roles open across engineering, marketing, community, operations, and more. Go to www.notion.so/careers and get applying. Link in the show notes as well.
Yo, that's been this week's Techish. Thank you for tuning in. I want to read out some reviews because some people have been chiming in with their, you know, their two cents. I really appreciate
reviews
that.
So here's one review. Reviews in the house.
This one was titled The Perfect Intersection of Tech and Western Blackness. I like that specification.
Oh.
This podcast is Chef Kiss, basically, obviously the little Chef Kiss thing.
Mwah.
All right, now so many of Abadesi's quotes because Homegirl has bars. She's a poet, OMG. Michael is literally the only devil's advocate in the universe that is actually correct. That kills me. I always want to roll my eyes, then in the end, he's actually right. And then side note, I was the one that DM'd that dancing baby on IG, sending love from LA. That's from Dreaming Warrior in the US. Shout out to that. That's hilarious.
Shout
I want to say I'm a devil's advocate. Would you say that I'm a devil's advocate on the show?
Yeah, maybe. I'm just focusing on the part where she said I was like a poet. I'm like, okay, I like that.
You got bars, MC Abba, that's what I'm calling from now on in.
Turkish mixtape dropping Christmas 2020.
There we go. And then someone says, what a raw and insightful podcast. The latest episode on virtual influencers and the problems of Black History Month was extra powerful. Could feel the emotion and passion from both of you on my side. Might even be my favorite new podcast. What do you mean, might even be? Come on, I'm joking. Shout out to that. That's from Vapor and Zigger, based in the UK. Shout out to that. We global out here. All right, cool.
Say
we'll leave it at that.
Can you just say who it's from again?
B-A-I-B-A. Vapor, Zigger.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's the end of the episode. Hit us up on #techish to like chat with us and leave your feedback and let us know what you think, and then also leave a review if you want to feature on the show. We're going to read out some really dope ones, and yeah, that's it. Extra Ish, our podcast on Patreon if you want more of us in your earpiece, and we'll catch you next week.
Thank you. #techish.
Bye.